I'm Chris Barker.
And I'm Will Betts. And this is Music Tech's My Forever Studio podcast, brought to you in partnership with Audient. And this time we're coming to you from Tile Yard Studios in London.
In this podcast, we speak with musicians, producers, DJs and engineers about their fantasy forever studio.
The studio that our guests dream up is one they must live with for eternity. But even in Studio Foreverland, we do have some rules, don't we?
Yes, that's right. The rules. Our guests get to choose a computer, a DAW and an audio interface. Those are free, but then they only get six other bits of audio equipment.
However, there's one more rule.
No bundles!
That's right, choosing a package of software or hardware that is sold as a bundle will not be allowed.
This time we're joined by a critically acclaimed producer, remixer and DJ.
That's right, our guest has remixed people like Daft Punk, the Chemical Brothers. He's worked with bands like Lay the Pier, the Mystery Jets and even the mighty Duran Duran.
He's also a passionate gear nerd with some amazing equipment in his own studio, so this might be a challenge for him.
Could be challenging. That's right, this is My Forever Studio with Errol Alkin. Welcome.
Hi,
Errol.
Welcome. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm all right, thanks. It's pretty early. Sorry, I got coffee. So
it's whatever time people are watching or listening to this at.
That's right. Yeah, we exist outside of time.
Yeah. Fantasy forever time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you sort of heard the rules there. I mean, before we get into building the dream studio, let's talk about little getting into this old production game. I mean, you started off as a musician or a DJ or a bit of both. Like, how did that start?
My earliest attempts at making sound or manipulating sound goes right back to when I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. I had bought my father finally given in and got me a Spectrum computer that I was after. For everyone who don't know, the Spectrums, they were these tiny little computers the size of an iPad. They had like rubber buttons on them, and they only had 48k of memory. So,
which was advertised, that was a thing though.
It was actually the Spectrum 48k.
yeah,
that was the name of it. So it was extremely basic. Sounds was monophonic, mm-hmm. and if you wanted to make sound or make a melody, you had to program it in by going beep, a number, which was the note, and then a comma, and then you put another number after it, which would be the length of the note, and then you put like another thing in to make a space or a rest or anything like that.
So like tracker software meets making a melody on the old Nokia phones.
It's more like the melody on the Nokia phone, actually. Yeah. Exactly like that.
Yeah.
Like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So I remember making ringtones
on
that
as well.
Yeah, me
too. You the one in the friendship group that made everybody's ringtones for them. That's what I was.
I only made my own. I only did bespoke for myself.
Bespoke. Oh, I hired myself out.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Get me something from the vending machine. I'll do the Neighbours theme tune for you.
What was your go-to? What were you programming on there?
On the Spectrum or the Nokia?
Oh, the Nokia.
You know what? I only programmed one because it took so long, but I always thought it sounded like a good ringtone. And you know the opening synth line from the Chemical Brothers' Music Response?
Okay,
nice.
Right.
You know that line?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That one, I thought it would sound great on a Nokia just because of the, it's like a square wave sort of sound. And I just thought it would. Anyway, and it did. So that was the only one I did on there. But back then on the Spectrum, my uncle tasked me with... he asked me, can you do the theme from Knight Rider on that? So I spent an age programming the theme from Knight Rider on the Spectrum.
What was his purpose for that?
Well, I think he just wanted...
Doing the theme from Knight Rider, mate.
But we were both fans of Knight Rider, you know. It's like one of those things where you kind of like go in like, you know, you've got the opportunity to do something, you know, what piece of music... is important to you enough to go and, you know, mimic it or copy it or something like that. So
your first route into making sounds was programming, was...
Well, I was a programmer, actually. I got into computer programming first, really. Like, so I learned how to program... back then, when you used to buy computer magazines, there'd be a section that like reviewed games, there'd be a section that was news about games that were coming, and there'd be a whole programming section.
Mm.
So I would read these things cover to cover. So I'd be like, well, why don't I try to write my own code? Why don't I learn how to hack software, you know, which is what I ended up doing. And, you know, you'd do those things where you'd go in and
you know, you find a bit of code that how many lives it gave you in the game, and then you'd give yourself like 100, you know. So, you know, I learned how code worked, and then from there I kind of learned. I've had some dabbled in ASCII code as well, but then shortly after that I got an Amiga computer.
Nice.
Which
500?
It was 500, yeah. Amiga 500, and that came with a piece of software called Soundtracker.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I bought a digitizer, which plugged in the back, a big clunky thing, and you could, I kind of like took the output of my stereo that I had in my room at the time into there, and then would like sample just bits from records that I liked, you know, like little bit. I mean, because so many productions back in the late 80s would have like little bits of like Public Enemy things in there. First thing I did was just like go and find those little bits of like Flavor Flav or Chuck D, in other words, and have a whole, like get them all sampled in and save them onto a disc and whatever. And then, you know, I was listening to a lot of rave then as well. So, you know, you'd sample, you know, Breakbeats and the 8-Men Break or whatever, you know.
So the sort of the kind of indie guitar side that some people might know you for in terms of the bands you've worked for, and you know you can play, you're a musician as well, right? Like that came later.
Well, the whole thing about being, am I, you know, into electronic music or am I into guitar music? I mean, for me it's just music, you know. It doesn't, like, music has always been like language to me, you know, and it's how you understand or decipher certain language. And if you're able to even repeat it, if you're able to speak in that language as well, you know, there's certainly a load of musical styles that I would never attempt to try to speak in, you know, because I don't feel fluent in it in that sense. So
that's a good way to put
know,
it, yeah.
I just absorb what I absorb, and I try to put out what I feel I want to communicate, really. So, you know, guitar, I mean, back in 1990 when I was, you know, sampling things on my Amiga or whatever, you know, I was listening to Pirate Radio, plus, you know, I was watching like Top of the Pops or The Chart Show or whatever, and, you know, being completely blown away by guitar bands at the same time. I wasn't ever told that you had to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
Apart from a little bit in the playground where some kids would be, you know, they're into something and they're not into something else. And to me, that just baffled me. Like, why
that attitude was really important, because, you know, you were at the forefront, or one of the people at the forefront of that fusion between sort of club culture and indie culture, you know, because indie kids weren't going to, you know, see DJs, really. And then it all sort of did happen with things like LCD and the nights you were doing, and like bands and acts like Soul Wax, Too Many DJ Sets. And that kind of, again, that same attitude of just like being sort of genre agnostic as such, like we just like good tunes.
Yeah, exactly.
It united that night out crowd though as well. I mean, I remember going to your nights and it being like the goth kids, the indie kids, the ravers, you know, just didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Yeah. I mean, I'm still, I mean, I was surprised then when it was like a big thing that, you know, like, oh, you know, this is happening, or you're doing this, or, and just to me, and also like, you know, when I met Dave and Steph Soul Wax as well, when we first met and I first like went through their record collection. I mean, we first met when they were actually DJing at their own after show party in Dingwalls in like 99 or something like that. And I went and introduced myself because I kind of got in touch with them about playing at Trash in 99. So this is well before all the, you know, a lot of stuff happened for all of us. And the first thing they said to me was like, really nice to meet you. Could you just look after our records for one sec and like put one on? If it runs out, we just got to quickly run to the back to do something. I was like, yeah, sure. So I went straight into the booth. And they used to like cart around these huge crates of records, like vinyl records, like about 8 or 9 of them. And I just was like, started going through their records. I was like, oh my God, it's like my record collection. But it was the connection was the variety of music, you know. It wasn't just one kind of thing. And it's amazing when you kind of come across people like that in whatever kind of creative field that you're in, because like a lot of the time the creative fields are, you know, there's a lot of like fences or borders within them, you know, because,
well, it's easier to survive if you fence yourself in, really, because people know what they are, you know, they know what they're booking if they're on that side.
Yeah. And there's also gatekeepers to those things as well. People do guard their corner, and, you know, they're very specific about who comes in and who doesn't. And, you know, when we kind of
when we were at that point in time, you know, we hated all that stuff. You know, there shouldn't be gatekeepers. You know, gates are there to be blown off. You know, it's like they're not there to be, you know, like everyone should have a voice in what they're looking to do. And people can, if they like it, they can be part of it. If they don't, that's fine, you know.
Well, let's get started on the studio building.
Okay.
So the first thing we ask, and again, this is probably going to be influenced by your entire career in the music industry, but where in the world would you put your dream studio?
I'd be in London, 100%.
100% in London?
London, yeah. I mean, yeah, London is... I mean, now you said that, now I'm just thinking...
It could be anywhere.
Yeah, no, it would be London. I feel it'd be London because ideally it would be somewhere that I could go to frequently, far more frequently than I'm able to even now, you know. And London's my home. You know, I'm very much I was born in London. I'm very much influenced by London. A lot of, a lot of my friends are here.
So would when you say London, though, obviously London's a big place, are you thinking kind of...
North London. Definitely. Yeah. However, though, I would say I've worked in studios all over London, and I've always enjoyed traveling to studios. Like, I've always, like, for some reason, you know, when we're like putting a project together or whatever, and it's like, what studio can we use? And part of the journey, I think, is quite important when you go to a studio, because you're kind of like, there's a little bit of preparation that you kind of do in your head or whatever, and that differs to, like, if you're driving to a studio, if you're getting the tube to a studio, you know. So, I mean, for instance, I used Flood Studio for the second Ride album that I did, and the Duran Duran recordings, and that is Assault and Battery, and that's only like a 20-minute drive from where I am, you know. So that was kind of like a
great place as well.
Yeah, it was absolutely great. And also, it's such a great and, like, creative environment. Like, when I was there, you know, there'd be, like, Alan Mould would be downstairs, and or it would be, like, Flood, whoever he would be working with, and he'd be, you know, going into the kitchen and bumping into, you know, some really amazing, inspiring people, you know?
So do you, for those projects specifically, do you get to choose the studio or the... Yeah, so...
Yeah,
I mean... So for the Duran Duran project, that was your decision?
Yeah, because for that one, my opening kind of feeling towards the whole thing was that I really wanted to capture the rhythm section live. So I really wanted a great-sounding live room. I wanted live drums. I didn't want it to be done in a control room.
Had they recorded there before?
No.
Did you feel any pressure in, like, that choosing? And it not... Because it'd be quite easy to go, we'll do Abbey Road, or we'll do somewhere fancy that's Duran Duran... You know,
yeah, I mean, I really liked it because, I mean, I've known Flood for a while, and he's always been super, super supportive towards me, and as Alan Mulder as well. So I really liked that environment. I thought it was a really great environment to take a band into. And I also felt that what was there, you know, they got the old desk from that used to be Wessex Studios in there, and they...
Is it a big SSL?
No, it wasn't. It's I think it's an AMEC. I think it might be AMEC. It's the one that never mind the bollocks.
Last time I was there, it had like a red leather. Everything was red in there. Ooh. I think it was before.
How long ago was that?
Long time.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
They had red NS10s and red and like a red leather wrist thing on the desk. I can't remember what the desk was, but yeah, the whole room was red. But it was actually kind of a cool thing.
So I like red rooms.
Yeah.
So basically, also, you know, he has a whole load of amazing synthesizers in there as well, which I knew that Nick would really appreciate being around, as would I. And it was also a place which was kind of everyone could kind of reach within reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's also important to make sure that, you know, everyone is not put out by getting there.
Yeah,
you know,
they can't arrive selfish fresh. Yeah.
It wasn't a selfish decision. I was aware of where everyone would be and traveling into it and stuff like that. So, but I just thought it was a fantastic environment to take a band like that into, you know?
For sure.
And as the same with Ride as well. We tracked all the drums for the second Ride album I did in there
as well.
Was that
before Duran Duran? So that's why you knew it was a great sounding live room as well.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And also, you know, the engineers who worked there as well, you know, that's also a reason to go to somewhere as well because, you know, it's how comfortable you feel somewhere as well, the relationship you have with them, all those things, you know.
Them understanding what you're trying to get out of a sound as well, like in terms of miking and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it would be, so the Dream Studio would be in London. I would say like, you know, my favourite studios that I've used in London, I mean, there's Salt and Battery, like I just said. I really love Conk as well, down in Crouch End. There's something just particularly just old school about it. It's got this kind of amazing, like, it's like stepping into the past, you know, but in a really positive
way. But we're thinking really North London way. And what kind of vibe? So, like, how do you like your environment? Is it kind of...
Well, if I could build a studio myself, it would be geared around having a great sounding live room. Obviously, I would take from all the kind of environments that I've
experienced. A live room inspired by... Assault and Battery, inspired by a bit of Conk.
I think Conk and Assault and Battery have two of the best sounding live rooms that I've used. I mean, The Garden as well, which used to be Matt Johnson's, which is now a storeroom for Pret a Manger, I think.
a great sounding storeroom.
Was a fantastic sounding storeroom. That was also brilliant as well. Like those three rooms were.
Should get amongst the sandwiches. Junk it in there as like a promo video. That'd be quite nice.
Yeah.
So if you had to pick one,
just removing sandwiches to get the acoustics right, one sandwich at a time.
Wow, that's true acoustic absorption.
Just open that packet. Actually, the bread's quite
more tuna. Actually,
oh god, yeah.
So would you steal one of those rooms, or would you kind of take elements of each of them?
I think I like the kind of compact nature of Conk. It's kind of like narrow along, and at the end there's a little where the old control room used to be. Mm-hmm. They've got a piano in there. They've got a grand piano in there. This was last time I was there, so it might change since then. And then I liked how it was big, but it was just still small enough to feel vibey, like not cavernous, you know. I actually like how when you're like not, when you don't have too many options, you have to think on your feet. You have to think creatively, because I think that's when you sometimes get the most interesting results. Well, like, you know, setting up an amp in the toilet, and then, you know, you realise that there's a shower in there as well. And so you think, God, what would happen if I put, you know, open the door a little bit, put a mic in there against the wall, and you get some insane, like, slap delay thing to the guitar sound that you wouldn't have got if you'd have set it up in the wooden box that's been designed for it, that's been, you know, perfectly kind of like treated for there not to be any reflections or something. You know what I mean? It's like...
That's how you get original sounds as well.
Exactly. It? And sometimes, you know, when you're talking about music, or if you're, you know, if you're kind of like sitting with someone who's remotely interested in hearing these things, and you're talking about how certain sounds have been, you know, achieved, you'll go, oh yeah, that sound, we did that by doing this or whatever, and it kind of, you know, there was one later PFing I remember when we tried to like create a reverb chamber by holding like a practice amp into the air conditioning and then finding the other part of where the air conditioning was at the other part of the studio to mic it up from there. You know, it didn't work, but you know, you, these inspiring things, I think, what make a little bit of difference.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and it's all those energy different. And that excitement that goes into it.
It's a bit like a bigger version of the Cooper Time Cube, that garden hose. You know, it's like the one with the garden hose in it, but like even bigger version. Yeah. But like, so that's one of those weird experiments. Have you got any other weird experiments you did in the studio to kind of...
Yeah, loads. Oh god. I mean, there's loads of things like maybe it's not weird, but like, you know, when there's a, like the Hoxton Square, there's a studio there, like a studio there where we did like Two Doors Down. I remember I'd a few weeks before I'd seen a documentary about, I can't remember what Bowie song it was on, but I think Tony Visconti set up a series of microphones along a corridor, mm-hmm. that were gated and would open up based on the how hard a snare was hit.
Recorded in Hansa, Ton Studio.
Is that one? Yeah. There you go. So, you know, you try your own version of that.
I didn't even mean that wasn't prepared. I just so happens.
You might have had a Pret a Manger like t-shirt.
I've actually got a Pret t-shirt on, yeah.
Do you know what? It's not like a lot of it's not a studio. That room is now a ballroom. So.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Same thing. Sorry, that was weird. But yeah. Wasn't expecting to do that.
Yeah, but you know, you kind of like get these, you know, you'll hear about how something is done, you try your own version of it, you know, and somewhere, you know, you'll get a different result, obviously, but it's the inspiration, you know, it's that kind of like, wow, rather than using, you know, adding a reverb to something or, you know, like double tracking it or whatever, we try this idea. And, you know, we did that. Mm. We did it on Two Doors Down, actually. I think it's on the snare on the chorus. I think we did it on there.
And love the sound of that record.
Thank you. Might have actually taken the snare and double tracked it in the corridor and recorded it from, you know, from there, or might have reamped it, something like that. But
Let's hit that point. You said you like limitations, so this is going to be perfect for you.
Let's lock in that the location. We're in North London with a great sounding live room. You're essentially stealing conch,
yeah.
At the moment, or are you
a bit of conch? I'd steal a bit of. I would actually also steal a bit of thing from Assault and Battery in the sense where there's other studios in there. There's just something that kind of brings you out of your world a little bit when you bump into other people in a corridor, or if you're like, you know, or if someone else calls you in and says, hey, can I get your opinion on something, or I want to play you something or something like that. I don't know, for me that's really nourishing, you know. Rather than just being like completely closed off, you know. I mean I spend a lot of time doing a lot of stuff on my own, you know, so you know, it'd be great to have the opportunity for there to be just other people around as well.
The Music Tech My Forever Studio podcast is supported by Audient, makers of the ID range of audio interfaces.
Yes, building on Audient's 25 years of design heritage, the ID range spans from the portable ID4 to the more feature-packed ID14 and 24 interfaces, all the way up to Audient's powerhouse desktop interface, the ID44.
You can expect rugged build quality and exceptional audio performance across the entire range, with every ID interface using the same award-winning console mic preamps found in their renowned recording console, the ASP8024HE.
The ID24 is the latest addition to the range, featuring two of those console mic preamps, along with balanced inserts, a JFET instrument input, ADAC expandability, and customizable monitor control, making the ID24 and its larger sibling, the ID44, perfect for using with outboard equipment and tracking instruments and vocals.
That's right, and the Audient ID24 is available now, priced at £299, €349, and $399.
Visit audient.com for more information and to explore the full ID interface range.
Your three free items.
The three free items. Yeah. So a computer, a DAW, and an audio interface.
Okay. That's kind of easy.
Yeah. Part, okay. Uh-huh.
So the computer's easy.
Yeah.
And I could be quite specific about which one as well, because up
Spectrum
until...
Spectrum 48.
Yes. With an Amiga lights on the side. It would be the new Mac Mini M2.
Okay.
The new one. But and I would say this to anybody who's on the lookout for these, because I speak to a lot of people, and I used to have an old cheese grater, you know, the Mac Pros, since like 2010 or something. And I completely what do you call it? Fully loaded? Is that fully loaded term?
Spec'd,
you
know, it out.
Yeah. Spec'd it out. Like, I had the most RAM you could put in it. I had like each chassis had a hard drive in it, and I was running everything off the board and rather than externally, and you know, so that kind of thing. So that got to the point where you just couldn't move up OSs, and it meant that, you know, some specific bits of software weren't working anymore, and it just got to the point where like it was time. But I mean, I even forced the firmware upgrade on it. Like, you can only go up to, like, if I'm right, I think it only goes up to 1.2 on the firmware, but I found a workaround to get up to 1.3, which meant you could still go up a few more OSs.
Right.
So I don't know if
the old Spectrum hacker coming back out.
This is there's somewhere on the internet that some people wrote some code to do that, and I did that, and I got it up another bit of the firmware, which is totally safe, and I managed to get up another OS, which meant that a couple of other things started working. But then, you know, it was just like banging your head off a wall, really. And so I thought, it's time to upgrade. And I did my research as to what of the new Macs I could go up to. Because, you know, part of you is thinking, I'm just going to get the fastest Mac that I can because it's going to future-proof you. But that's not necessarily the case in this, because people are talking about getting like the Max, the studio one, which is more for like...
Well, I was going to say, we should upsell dreams here, surely.
We could.
Upsell your dreams.
Your dreams to a Mac studio.
I don't want it.
Don't want it?
No.
Okay.
So tell us why. I don't want it because, like, I don't need it. I mean, so this is what I did. And I'd recommend this to anybody out there who wants to basically get a really good machine that's going to be super fast and really great value. I got whatever that Mac Mini M2 is, that's like 1,400 quid. I think 16 gigabyte, and I think it's 500 gigabyte
hard drive,
right?
SSD, yep.
I got one of those. And then you can get these chassis, right, for like £99, which sit underneath, and it basically expands the connectivity.
Yeah.
It gives you some USB outs and stuff on the front, SD and stuff like that. But there's also a little bit in there where you can put, and this is what I did, I put a 2 terabyte like little drive in there, and it's literally on the board because it's connected by USB-C. So you've got a load of like space, and you know, for what you're paying for that machine, you know, it's going to last you about 10 years or something.
And portability important to you then? Do you need to be able to take that?
No, because I've technically got 3 studios at home. So, and believe it or not, I'm about to set up a 4th, and you're going to laugh as to what the 4th one is.
Go on. Is it an Amiga 500?
Yeah. And I'll tell
is
you
it
how
really?
The, yeah, it is, yeah. So basically, I've got my main studio, which is geared around this M2.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another studio in my record room where I keep all my vinyl, and I kind of start a lot of stuff in as well. Just, I like kind of being quite relaxed about being creative. I don't want to sit down and be like, I've got to do something. I like just opening stuff up and
noodling and then seeing what happens.
Yeah, a lot of stuff starts off in there, but they're all kind of linked in some way. Like, you know, I can save a project there and I can put it into the studio and carry on there and stuff. So, and that's just another, like, that's a 2020 Mac. Like, it's not the M2 one, but it works fine. And then my laptop now, I kind of went against everything I said about working on laptops, but I'm kind of also happy to work on a laptop on a plane or in a hotel room or something like that to kind of start an idea or whatever. I don't really like laptops for music because I kind of equate laptops with email and kind of more admin-based kind of stuff.
Still the same for DJing as well? No laptop DJ?
Oh, no, I've never taken a laptop into a nightclub. No, never.
Same.
And the 4th one is, I thought, you know what, I've got this old sampler and I've got my Amiga, so I've still got like all the software. And a friend of mine, actually a neighbour who's an equal geek in this way, was chatting to him and he had a little box where you can convert the like RF output of the Amiga to HDMI.
Okay.
So I can plug it into like a new screen. So I just thought, I just open it up and just see what...
I went down this road with the Commodore 64 and the Prophet 64 cartridge with MIDI. And
did you?
They made a modern software for the Commodore 64 where it had a sequencer, a 303 clone, all using the SID chips. And you could stack the SID chips in the 64 to get more, you know, power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but it was, for me, it was a bit of one of those holes you go down and go, why am I doing this? Yeah. I'm not making any music.
Yeah. No, I thought the same as well. I'm like, why am I doing this? Yeah. But then I thought, if it's just going to be an afternoon of just open up a hit and hearing it, seeing it and stuff like that, then it's fine. You know what I mean? I'm just like...
It was fun when it was set up and it was kind of cool. And you work in different ways when you're wrestling with the interface of a Commodore 64 or whatever, and it gives you, it coughs out different ideas. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I've got the old MIDI. I've got the MIDI like box, the digitizer, and stuff like that. And I just thought, cool. I mean, I don't know. I just thought, well, why not?
So, but for your dream studio, we're just locking in that Mac Mini.
The Mac Mini. Yeah, I mean, it's just worked. It's been so smooth. You know, and nothing is a strain on it, and I like that. You know, I like, you know, if I switch something on, I need it to be working there and then and stuff. I'm very, very impatient in that way. So, you know,
let's move on to your get through these three items, the interface and the DAW.
Interface would be...
this is fantasy, don't forget. You can go big.
I could go big. I mean, see, the interfaces that I've loved, I really loved my RME 800.
It's a popular choice.
I really loved it. However, due to FireWire technology no longer being supported by Apple, it will not work with my Mac Mini. And however fantastical this studio is...
They have the new ones, new RMEs, don't they?
Yes, they do. And also they have this cool box, this link box, where you can like link up like 56 channels or ins and outs, all by ADAP.
Oh, it's ADAP?
ADAP, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got these. Actually, I can veer off on a slight tangent here, because this week I actually spent upgrading the power supplies in my Apogee sound cards. And because they're 20 years old, you can't actually find an exact fit for it. So the nearest fit that I could find, which came all the way from America, was the right footprint, was the right voltage, everything, you know. However, it was 2 millimeters too high for you to put the lid on. So we had to angle grind the heat pads on the top and then put washers on the top to actually have it sit on there. That was what my Monday was.
So doing that instead of like maybe just going, this has seen the best of the day, let's move on to another.
No, I'm a interface. Big believer in recycling things.
Yeah. Good, yeah.
And right also on. They work and they sound great. And you know the equivalent to go out now, you'd be spending like, you know, $2,000 on each unit, you know, to do that. And they sound great and they work, you know. I'm really loyal to the gear that works for me. You know, I don't really, you know, like something replacing something else has to really be time for it. Like the computer, you know, because I suppose I get very stuck in my ways with.
Well, and it's risky changing things when it's working, and when you know, when you're used to a process and a workflow and you're having success from it, you know, and it's your job and your career. Yeah. It's like, is this going to set me back months?
Yeah.
You know,
it's why people don't upgrade. I mean, I'm putting off upgrading endlessly.
Yeah.
But in terms of your
interface, what you're
going to
choose?
Dream interface, what's it going to be? I have to press you on this.
I'm really climatized to using the UAD.
Okay.
Card.
Plugins.
All plugins.
Hang on.
No, but they come with the card, right?
The ones that come with the card, don't
just they? The ones that come with that particular...
Yeah, I mean, I'd get the best, Apollo that you could probably get.
Okay.
Whatever that one.
Do you
that
care
is.
About Prees or no?
Yeah, I like the Prees on the Apollo.
The 8 Pre, is it?
The
X8P
would be.
What's the one above that? If it's fantastic, what's the most expensive one you can get from UAD?
I think the Apollo 16 is the biggest one, but it doesn't have any Prees on it.
I'll stick to what I know then. I'll stick to the 8. The 8XP, is it?
Yeah.
XAP. Okay.
And then the DAW, then, of choice. This is the free item. You can select more things when we get to your 6
okay,
items.
Okay, got it. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, well, all right. So I use, whenever I work with bands, I use Pro Tools, basically. It's, I find it for audio, for tracking, for the emulation of tape as such, you know, and editing. It's like... I'm just climatized to that really now from like, you know.
And I guess from working in other studios, when you go to most studios, that must be the default.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going for Conk absolutely. And battery, assault and battery.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like I have recorded like bands in Logic before, but like, I don't know, I'm just used to Pro Tools for that.
Because the Mystery Jets was a balance of both, wasn't it?
Mystery Jets was all Pro Tools. But we use actually probably some Logic because we did that across 9 different studios.
Yeah, I think because I interviewed you back in the day, and I think because I remember that little bell sound on Two Doors Down was the Logic.
Oh yeah,
synth.
That was the Logic synth. Yeah, but we literally like and then some later Pierce stuff was like PC synths as well. But we would just like do the 3.5 mil jack out straight into the desk, like,
and then into Tools. Yeah,
that's nice. It. Yeah, use it like an instrument. But
anyway, sorry, back to Pro Tools.
Yeah, I mean. Pro Tools is what I would use to record bands, but
Fantasy Forever Studio.
I use Logic more, really. I do use Logic more, especially for MIDI stuff and for remixing. And I found that if you'd asked me this like 10 years ago, I'd say Pro Tools in that sense. But I think Logic has has kind of take like kind of it, it's a lot. I don't know. I'm gonna use the word like better in a way because I've always used it as well. I've always liked it, but I'm super comfortable with it now.
Yeah.
For whatever kind of thing,
it's, I need things to do. Like that. It's sometimes a combination of you getting more comfortable with it and the software itself getting better.
Yeah.
So it's like
yeah.
It's caught up in a lot of ways. But like in terms of the remixing, then you said it. You prefer it for remixing. What is it specifically about Logic that that works for you?
Basically, just being able to, for example, like if you bring the stems in of the remix that you're working on, and then you want to then sync a load of outboard stuff to play alongside it, so you can jam it out and record it back in, or you know, writing MIDI and all that kind of stuff. And things like latency and whatnot, you know, I guess
warping stuff as well now with the,
And that's, actually, you know what, I got to say, you know, I think I used to have like a waves, like pitch shift correction thing on my old computer. But then since I went to a new one and you couldn't take your waves with you on the stuff, I was then,
it's a wave goodbye.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
It's very good. Yeah. I didn't have like auto tune or anything. So, and someone said, "Oh, why don't you just use the one in Logic? It's really good." I was like, "Oh, right. I didn't know there was one." So, and then they told me where it was, and it was great. I was like, "So easy."
Yeah.
I have something on board, you know, that's not a third party thing. That isn't even a plugin. You know what I mean? It's like in the interface. So the door, it would be Logic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll lock those in and then we'll start on your... These are your six items now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So item number one.
Okay. Item number one...
Think about what you've got already as well.
Okay. Recently, I kind of was doing a lot of stuff in the box. Just for sheer convenience. And I mixed something at my friend's studio, Jesten Paulsen, who's got... space in Strongrooms, Mirror Studios, and we were kind of like doing a bit of a shootout between like sound cards and converters, and using a summing mixer, and I had forgotten, you know, and I'd taken for granted the fact that it, no matter how good your mix sounds digitally, when you do kick it out into a summing mixer. Through good converters and stuff and come back in and you do that properly, it always sounds that just that little bit better.
Yep.
And I have got a Chandler TGI mixer, which I used to use on everything. Like everything that went through my studio went through that. And I stopped using it. And I was like, why? It's going through transformers and circuitry, which kind of like can give you a little better separation, arguably, can give it just a bit of a tonal like focus, you know. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can do this as well, even if you don't have a summing mixer. One thing that Steve Dubb taught me when we were mixing the Beyond the Whistlesleeve album together, like, was what we were doing is when we had all the stems ready, we were literally just passing like the summed, like the drums, the bass, the guitar, the vocals through a culture vulture, but the culture vulture wasn't really doing anything. It was like you'd listen to it and you'd toggle it and it's minor amount of whatever, but just from doing that, it just kind of, it just does something. It kind of, you can say, maybe shaves off a few of the something at the very top and very bottom or whatever, or it just focuses it in. And then when you kind of bring it back in, you listen to it, it sounds a little bit different. It sounds a bit more open. At one point, I think we might have done it on some of the Mystery Jet things and late appear as well, but we'd do like the stem mixes. Mm. You know, you do a mix, you put it down at the tape or whatever, and then you'd run off all the stems. And then we used to then do a digital bounce of the stems as they were sitting, you know, in the project, like eight channels. Mm. And then go between that and the bounce that we'd done, the summed bounce, and that would sound different as well, you know? Yeah. And we ended up sometimes like using that version because there was just a little bit more space in it somehow. I really, you know, if I was to be pushed to explain the science on it, I don't think I could, like, convincingly.
Mm.
But, you know, I trust my ears, which is, I think, all you can do in this, you know, in this game, you know. So, yeah, I found that, you know, so sometimes you'll do these kind of things and it's a little bit, you know, not what you would expect, but it sounds good. You know what's really important as well is you know, if it sounds right, it's right, yeah. You know. And also it's the whole thing.
Joe Meek quote, isn't it?
Yeah, if it sounds right, it is right. But yeah. Also, you know, it's, you know, not to get too, you know, bogged down in stuff because I tend to find that some people can kind of really, that he can kind of like extinguish the excitement from what they're doing by kind of going too deep into that thing of like, oh, it's this or it's that, or I haven't got this or whatever. And it's just
like me on really, the Commodore 64. That was the all excitement.
you need to make sure that you're kind of moving to what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, really important.
So if item but, one, are we thinking this Chandler then? Is that what
I would definitely go for Chandler. Yeah. I'd definitely go for Chandler.
Upsell your dreams. I'm going to upsell you. Don't you actually really want an EMI TG12345 mixing console?
The real thing.
The real thing. You could have the real thing from Abbey Road.
Oh, God, I could, couldn't I?
I could, yeah.
Why am I being so, like, loyal here?
That's why we're here. Upselling Look, dreams.
I mean, Chandler okay. do great gear, and it's yeah. all based on this stuff, but you could go...
But can we just also address something about, like, if you were to say to me, you know, I'll give you a new... Korg MS-20, like a new one I've got, or you can have an old vintage one.
Yeah.
Or you offer me, you know, an ARP 2600, a new one, mm-hmm. or an old one.
Yeah.
I would probably go for the new one.
Why?
Because I feel that I've got a lot of old stuff and it keeps going wrong. And it keeps it slows me down. It holds me back. And some of the things, like the Korg MS-20 new one, and like, for example, the Monopoly clone that I've got, I think sounds as good. Mm. You know, I mean, fair play to the new Pro One copies that they've made. I've got a lot of people who have had Pro Ones for a very long time, and they're super. Picky about what yeah. they like, what they don't like,
yeah,
and they're like, it's as good, and yeah, wow. I think that,
and it only has to get so close, then you have the reliability factor, and it's like
the reliability is really important. Yeah. I mean, I you know, like every time a vintage synth breaks down, and
it's months, you know, right, it's, to go out,
get send it off somewhere, and it costs you half the value of the synth to get back and yeah. whatever.
One
and
of not, the five people in the UK that can actually repair it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, if you're one of the few people who can afford to do that as yeah, well, yeah. you know, it's like, it's, I love vintage gear. You know, I've got an old Polyvox synth that, like runs on diesel, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, it doesn't know yeah. what it wants to make, what kind of sound it wants to make, you know? It's yeah. got a mind of its yeah. own. And I love that for that. And I don't want that to be reliable. But there's certain things that I need to be reliable,
yep.
you know. So I think it's mixing and matching on these things. But taking on an old EMI,
yeah, but it's taking Forever Studio. You
Forever
have.
Studio, but it is, you know, like keeping it maintained.
Yeah. Well, yeah. we do actually have a Forever Studio maintenance tech.
Who's available?
yeah. 24/7.
24/7.
Yeah.
Okay. In that case,
does that change things? In that for you?
It does change it. Yeah, because you know you want. You know, if these things are going to work, you know, yeah. when they need to work, then yeah, if we're fantasizing here,
yeah.
then absolutely. You know what? If we're talking about rather than you're right, actually, why don't I just go for a Neve desk instead? If there's going to be a tech around, a Neve VR, because that the one they had in the garden was the one that we mixed Fantasy Black Channel on. No, we didn't. We mixed that in the strong rooms. Was it a Neve? They had a Neve VR in the strong rooms room one, I yeah. think.
One strong room is a. Yeah, I think one's a Neve and one's an SSL, right, in strong room.
Yeah, VR60.
Yeah, VR60.
Strong room
yeah.
one, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That one. And that do you one. Want the one from strong room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Great.
Money's no issue. I'm dreaming.
We had...
and as a tech.
We had the guys from Strong Room on season one, was it?
Season one, yeah.
Season one. So, yeah, we had Jake from Strong Room. So, yeah, sorry. The desk has gone. Right.
That's it.
Item number two. Let's move on to the next item.
Okay. Item number two would be...
You're going to need some monitors.
Yeah. I'd be the Genlec 1031As.
Bam. Look at that straight away.
Yeah, because I love Genlec monitors. And I'll tell you why. Because they're really great to write with. They're really great to... they're really flattering. So whatever you're doing sounds and feels good. And it keeps inspiring you to keep going. And also, you know, that I really love mixing on them. But obviously I have other speakers as well that I kind of go between. But those are the main ones. And I think...
When you go down the range of, or up the range of Genlecs as well, they stay quite consistent. That's what I like about them. Like, if you work somewhere, even on the little ones, like on sort of the broadcast-style radio studio ones, they just sound like the big ones, but without the low end. Or, you know, they don't change significantly from across the range. They sort of pretty consistent. So if you can work on one set, you can generally work on a lot of them, like if you go into other people's places.
And you know what? I actually got into Genlecs because... through the generosity of Dave and Steph Solwax back in like 2004, I think it was, when I just said to them, like, I said, I don't have any monitors. Like, what do you think I should try to get? I didn't know where to start with monitors, you know? And they just, oh, hey, we got some Genlecs you can use. And they brought them over from Belgium. Yeah, but they're super, super generous and kind like that. You know, they're sort of, and I was
Have you got any of their other kit?
Probably
in play, right? I was going to say we had them on the podcast, and they kept forgetting that they had kit in like Australia. Didn't we lend that to?
It's in a warehouse. Yeah, it's in a warehouse. Somewhere.
Yeah, I had their Chroma, their Fender Chroma.
Yes,
a couple of years ago, and also there was another synth as well. I had a string machine, a Logan string machine of theirs as well. Which I used loads on loads of things. But you know, it was there and it was looked after and it was used and. And then when they'd finally remembered I'd had it, I was like, oh, yeah, oh, that's yours, is it? I'm joking. No, I did actually tell them it was it. But also with the Genlecs as well, like, I mean, you know, I had them for years. And I was like, hey, I've still got your Genlecs. Like, so when I got the bigger ones, because they were the 1030s.
Yeah.
And you know, I really liked how they sounded and I got used to them. And every time I'd go into a studio, I'd make sure... you know, that they had Genlecs set up as well alongside whatever else they had. So even if they had like...
They became your NS10.
Well, there was always NS10s there as well. Always, to be honest with you, in like tracking stuff, you kind of set it up on the NS10s, really, and then switch to the Genlecs.
So can we... There must be some more upselling of dreams here.
Genlec 1031As, and also they're discontinued, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So if...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know that they do ones where they like
correct to the room, the SAMs that we've had those on before.
The 1032s, the SAM monitors,
they're much bigger, aren't they?
Good question. No, they look about the same size, but I could be wrong there.
Yeah.
Do you want to just go with the ones you like? You can just keep the ones.
I mean,
you like.
Can you? Is there?
We're showing a picture now for those listening.
Okay.
But they're the square ones as well. They're not the egg shaped Genlecs either.
Oh, I gotta say, I'm not a huge fan of egg shaped things. Eggs.
What about eggs?
I've got an egg shaped air fryer at the moment. Oh, I was thinking of switching it for a more rectangular shaped thing. I don't know why. I've just
unnerving. Did you watch Alien as a child?
Maybe. It might be that. I don't know. It's
those egg monitors you would have hated then. What are they? Who are they?
Those were Monroe Sonic.
Monroe Sonic eggs.
Right.
Egg-shaped speakers.
Yeah.
Apparently good because of the acoustics, right? Because they...
That was the theory, yeah.
I've got JR149s as well, which are the cylinders. You know those cylinders?
Oh, yeah.
Those are my hi-fi. But they're based on the old BBC monitors.
Okay, so we're going to lock...
Genlec 1031As. Let's just go with it, I think.
Yeah.
Because...
Love it.
Yeah.
We can always, when we go back, you'll hear it and you'll...
Yeah. So they're active as well, so I don't need to choose an amp as well.
Yeah. So item number three then.
Okay. So I built a compressor.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had a compressor built for me. It was basically an SSL clone.
Okay.
It was built by a guy, Pom, who built the boiler.
Oh, the guy who does the Pom Child.
Yeah, yeah.
Fairchild clones. Yeah.
So he built me a compressor. I said to him, I want an SSL compressor on steroids. And he built it for me.
Only equipment and things are allowed to be on steroids as a good thing. Whereas humans, it's seen as a bad thing, isn't it?
Generally.
Nobody goes, yeah. I want, like...
It depends on the community.
He's like a normal human, but on steroids.
Yeah.
Nobody says that. But with gear and stuff, it's acceptable.
Yeah.
They
go, what kind of gear are you talking about?
On steroids.
On steroids.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
It was like supercharged. Like, it was just like, you know, the Spinal Tap of compressors, you know, it went to 11.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
So,
and also he put a Neve width module on it, because when you go all the way to the right and you get the complete, just the phase signal, you can then hear your clocking. So this is when computers were a lot, it was built in like 2006 or 2007, something like that. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have it right, it sort of sounds digital and fragmented and stuff, and you can hear that in the sides, like more so than in the middle sort of thing. So you go all the way. I mean, it never really sounded like that to me, but apparently that's what it did. And it was called the Mustafa SSL 3000 or 4000 or something like that. It was based on an SSL 400 circuit, I believe. And you know, it's my own compressor. I actually had another one. I had one made for Dave and Steph as well. Yes, I think there's one sitting in their studio as well.
Yeah.
In Dewey. I mean, you know, if I'm coming out the Chandler, or in this case, it would still be, no, it'd be the Neve now.
Near the Neve.
If I was coming out the Neve, that'd be across it, you know.
And so it's like a G-series bus compressor, are we talking? Or is it a channel compressor?
It's based on the outboard SSL compressor.
Oh, so just a stereo compressor.
Yeah. It's not based on it's not a desk one.
Okay.
It's got more oomph to it if you need it. I don't know how he did it, but put some extra high powered caps in there or something. So
nice. He's a clever bloke as well. That's
very clever bloke. He's built me a whole bunch of things. Like, I would sometimes find junk, like in a junk shop, you know, just some valves or whatever, like on their own, and I'd be like, can you like turn this into something I could pass audio through and stick an EQ on it? And he'd be like, yeah, sure, I need to do it, put a box. I've just got loads of handmade stuff in my studio. Just because you just come across things and it's like, well, what would happen if you just put sound through it, you know?
Yeah.
What would it sound like? I've got an old 50s what is it, it's some kind of amp, and it's three valves in there, and so there are three different types of distortions. So we just like turn it into a distortion unit, you know. So I've got about half a dozen things that are handmade in my studio.
Amazing.
That's very cool.
And they've been used on stuff, you know. You'll just be like, well, you know, just whack the drums through that, or, you know, I just find it as you know when people say, oh, you know, if you stick like your drums through like an old like EMS like synthy or whatever, it sounds great, you know. It's like, yeah, you're just putting it through some circuitry, and you like how it sounds on the other end.
Yeah,
it's just the same principle, you know. If you haven't got an $8,000 60s synthesizer, you might have something that you found in a junk shop that will give you something different. Whether you use it or not is up to you, you know. Yeah. But to have that opportunity, you know, I think it's
well,
cool.
You've got two items left.
Okay.
On the studio gear. Sorry, three items left.
Yeah.
So we're going with the SSL, the Mustafa SSL.
So three items. Are any of the boutique things going to make it onto your forever studio?
For item number four.
And you've got the SSL, but item number four.
I mean, that is the main one. I don't think anything else I'd really want to take in. But I've already got a Neve desk, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I bought a Trident FlexiMix in like 2006, I think it was, and it's like 22 channel desk of like A class
double desk. I'm liking this so far.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
It was basically it's like all like it's like the top Trident circuits, like op amps and stuff in there, and EQs and whatever. And originally they Trident made these as monitoring desks for Queen, apparently.
Oh, wow.
And I believe Dare by the Human League was mixed on one. And I also heard conflicting things that Spiders from Mars was also mixed on it as well. Mm. But that might not be true. Or maybe part of it was tracked through it. I can imagine it from tracking because of just like, yeah, I mean, the pre's on it are super. And but what I did was, I really love how it sounds, but I can't cart a 22 channel desk to other studios with me. Mm. So I had, the way the Trident FlexiMix works is it breaks apart.
Oh, nice.
So you can pull a bucket, it's called a bucket, and you can pull a bucket out and it's connected by cards and you've got 8 channels. So I had a power supply modded onto it, put into a flight case, and I can take it wherever I want to go to. And I've got 8 Trident pre's and EQs, which you can use alongside anything else. So
that is very cool.
So would that be your number 4? That would
be one, yeah, because I love like Neve pre's as well. But it's nice to have an option.
Yeah.
You know?
You've only got 2 items left. I notice you've got a lot of preamps here. You've got preamps in your interface. You've got preamps in your Neve. You've got preamps in the Trident. Mm-hmm. You don't have any instruments yet.
Or microphones.
Or microphones.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. With the electric. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah. Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay, so.
All right.
Yeah. Mild panic setting in.
I would, you know what, microphone wise, just a good all rounder would probably be.
It's definitely what you're going to need with, yeah, with 2 items left.
The SM7B, sure.
As we're using right now.
As we're using right now. I mean, because it's, you know, I would have also said an RE20 as well, because for whatever instrument you want to put that across, that's always, it sounds fantastic. I've always loved them. Also, but this is more niche, but that Coles, and I can't remember the model number of it. It's the Coles. We called it the Pterodactyl because it looked like a dinosaur.
The sort of egg-shaped one.
It's not egg-shaped.
I'm sorry. Please stay.
It's not the ribbon. It's not the ribbon. It's the one that's a cardioid and a ribbon, I believe.
Oh, the ball and biscuit thing, is it?
No, it's literally looks like is it the 4344 or something like that?
Tell us a bit more about your experience with it. And
oh, that was one we'd always put it on the, like, in front of a drum kit and just like compress the hell out of it, and it always sounded great. And you'd build your drum sound around that a little bit, you know. Point, but it's also, yeah, if you only had like 2 mics on a kit, you know, I'd want that at the front.
You know, that could be your last 2 items, those 2 mics, or are you going to save?
Oh, God. Well, I'd only go for 1 mic.
Okay.
Really? 1 mic. Yeah, I'd go for 1 mic. I'd go for the SM7B, I think, because I think it's just super versatile. And
that's been a choice before, I think, as well. It's like, yeah, for that reason, it's fine.
There's also an Audio Technica one. If you're on a budget, and I remember I had it recommended to me. Is it Audio Technica 4040? Is that?
Oh, yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing. I think I had one.
That's like a black one.
Yeah.
It's a very standard looking condenser, but
that's a really good all rounder. If you like, that's the best, like, back when I got one.
It's under 300 quid, is it? So
about 300 to 400 quid.
That's about how much it cost when I got it.
Yeah.
About, you know, in like, you know, probably about almost 20 years ago, maybe, you know, or something like that. And that was recommended to me off the back of, like, you know, that's the best mic, all-rounder mic you can get for under, like, you know, maybe £800 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I really like, you know, all my microphones are a combination of kind of, I've got a Sony that I got, apparently used to belong to John Entwistle, and the number, the model number,
the C800G, the one with the big heatsink on the back.
It's a square one. It's like something 20.
Oh, wow.
Sony.
Oh, you're really testing.
C40?
C48.
C48, that's it.
C48.
But I like, it's a combination of like cheap stuff, you know, and not crazy. I mean, I don't own like a Neumann mic or anything like that. I don't think I could ever justify buying one, to be honest with you. Like, spending £8,000 on a microphone or something like that. It's just not in my, sorry, but like the, it doesn't work for me in that way. I would have to work with the limitation that I've got.
Yeah.
You know, if I can only get a 7B or an Audio Technica or, you know, this like Sony thing that I bought off John Entwistle, you know, for not much as well.
Well, let's move on to your final item, speaking of limitations again.
Mm-hmm. So, there's not much going on, really.
Yeah.
Loads of preamps.
So far, you're making music forever with Logic and a microphone, essentially.
And a lot of preamps.
Yeah, but you know what? I've actually done a lot of stuff in production. I use my voice a lot. Like, I'll make sounds with my voice and put it into samplers. And use those as like pads or percussion even.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if the sound's in your head, you can nearly get it there, can't you?
I mean, within reason, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
you're never going to be Beyonce, but like, you might be able to. I mean, what kind of noises are you making? What do you mean?
Loads of different things. I've, on a Mr. Jets track, you know, there's a track called Veiled in Grey.
Mm-hmm.
On there, we had like, we called them gob hats because I wanted to accentuate the open hi-hat part on the rhythm. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't be a vocal thing. So Caps was playing the open hi-hat bit on there. And we all went around a microphone and we did the tss, tss, tss part to accentuate it and brought that in to me. And it just sounds a little bit, it just, you know, it's a little bit wonky because the rhythm is kind of wonky. So I wanted to kind of push that aspect of it more. And you know, I kind of like, I've done it also with, like pad noises and stuff. Like you'll have a synth part, but then you pick up a mic and then you'll hum the same thing in there. Then you mimic
blend
it across
them together,
a keyboard,
yeah.
You know, filter it off and modulate it a bit. And then you get another layer of
people,
something.
I don't think people do that this enough because
people
it's the easiest way to get a unique sound.
Yeah.
Of like distance from the mic you're using, your own voice. I mean, immediately, there's loads of variables that cannot be recreated.
Yeah. If you listen to the Beyond the Wizard Sleeve mix of reanimation of The Bears Are Coming by Late at the Pier, there's a horn part in there, and a big part of that is my voice.
We had Jungle on the podcast, and we're surprised to hear that a lot of the horns on their record, on Jungle's record, was just mouth trumpets.
Yeah. That kind of thing, yeah. I mean, I mean, there was a bit. I mean, there's some real horns in there as well, but like, double that. And I really love the natural modulation that your voice brings on things. And it's from, I don't know. It's your voice.
Yeah,
you know,
it's unique,
if you want to connect with other humans, like use it to your advantage. You know, rather than, you know, you can synthesize stuff, and that's great. Obviously, you know, I'll get to that for my final thing, probably some form of synthesis. But I really like using my voice in times, you know, there's,
Well, then synth is going to be the final item, is it? Mm. And what's the old on new? You kind of want something versatile as well, do you?
Yeah.
Do you want something polyphonic or is it monophonic?
I tell you what, the synth that is my, like, what I love the most in the studio.
Octave
and
Cat.
And it's the first synth I bought, the Octave Cat. I love it, but that's got mine of its own as well.
An animal.
But I bought a Juno 6 in like 2001 for like £170 at a Blue Audio in Angel. I don't know if you remember that store. That was great. I bought so many synths out of there, and when it closed down, I was gutted because
weird it went under selling Junos at £170.
Well, yeah.
This was back in the day.
I bought two arps from there. I bought an arp Avatar, an arp Axe from there. I bought Hofner Bass. I bought my arp. No, what was one you mentioned?
The Octave.
Which apparently used to belong to Dan Donovan from Big Audio Dynamite. Okay. I found out, who I know as well. So that was kind of funny getting that. The one thing I know I wouldn't get is one of those huge modulars like the 700s.
Well, you'd be, that'd be some kind of bundle.
That would be a bundle. So you're not allowed it anyway. Bundle.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't go near it.
Okay, good.
It's just like that, yeah. I mean, I haven't really dabbled in that side of things, to be honest with you.
Because you're talking about the immediacy element as well, right?
Yeah, so, I just don't have the patience.
And so, I mean, you said the Juno 6.
I just love the voice. I love its voice. I love the tone of it. It's just really, I find it really an emotional synthesizer.
Mm.
Really, I don't know. I just really connect. I've always connected with it, and I've used it on so many things.
Again, it's a popular choice because it's immediate, but it's not limited.
Yeah,
it's a perfect balance between it not being complicated, but you can get loads of variety of sound out of it.
And you can also, like, you know, it's not really known, it's not really valued for bass, but for its bass sound as such, because people tend to go for Moogs and stuff like that, or Moogs and that for basses, but you can get an amazing...
It's on loads of records sound. As bass as well.
But it's always
used it for. You must have used it for bass on some records.
I have actually. I have used it for it. Yeah, but it's like it's people. I think naturally kind of gravitate to. I think because it's so revered for its like pad nature and that kind of modulation and stuff like that.
And you the know, chorus as well. Again,
the chorus on it's beautiful as well. Obviously, you know. But yeah, I kind of it's tough for me to commit to something that I don't have experience of. Like, I could say, you know, like a some extraordinary rare synth.
But this is Juno 6, not 60, not 106.
No, the 6, yeah. I mean, again, because I feel I know it inside out, so I probably wouldn't want to lose that.
All right, well, let's pause, let's lock that in and then have a listen.
Yeah.
So Will's going to take you through what you've just selected before we get onto your final
regret it, aren't I?
Before you get onto your final luxury item, okay? So Will, set the scene for us here.
We're in North London in a studio complex populated by the great and the good of music production.
Okay.
With a great sounding live room based on Conch. The computer is a Mac Mini M2, and that's a bargain at only £1,049. Great if you want to upgrade. Your interface is an Apollo X8P. Your DAW is Logic Pro X. And for your 6 items, you've chosen a Neve VR60, the one from Strongroom. For your speakers, you've chosen Genelec 1031As. You've chosen the custom POM Audio Designs SSL compressor clone called the Mustafa SSL 3000. You have a Trident preamp bucket from the FlexiMix. A Shure SM7B for your microphone, and your one and only synthesizer is a Juno 6. How does that work for you?
Sounds all right, actually.
I think I'm going to need some more ins and outs, aren't I, digitally? You're going to run that VR off an Apollo. Could I just swap that out for a HD rig? Some kind of...
Sure.
So yeah, there
you
we
can
go.
You can change it to a Pro Tools HD rig.
Yeah.
It's like a massive one.
Yeah, I'm going to need it, aren't I? So I didn't think this through properly, did I? Which is exactly what
that's
I
the point of the podcast.
with my studio when I put it together, I'm sort of like, I'm going to need more than this, I'm going to need more than that. So,
well, let's... Yeah.
Do you think you could do everything you needed to do with that, though? Say you've got the Pro Tools HD rig, you've got just one microphone, one synthesizer.
I mean, using Logic
with
everything that it has inside of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, in respect of, you know, I've done a lot of things with just using onboard Logic stuff or stuff within that I've bought into Logic, because obviously we're discounting sampled sounds and whatever.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think so.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Forever locked in.
I think so.
So now, before we get to the end of the podcast, we have the non-gear related luxury item. So something that you want in your studio that isn't a bit of studio kit.
I made a baffler, right? A sound baffler.
Okay.
Right. A massive one right at the back of the room above the couch.
How difficult was it to make?
Not hard. So I made a whole load of them before when I built
the studio.
Not baffling? I wasn't baffled by it, no.
Nice.
great.
But I used like this kind of acoustic fabric, and I had a picture of Donna Summer printed onto the fabric.
Cool.
Because every time when I'm in the studio, I find that photograph of her and her smile and just her general aura just like it's like sunlight in the room. you know?
And those records as well, of course.
So yeah, I mean, even those before records. Anything to do with sound, just yeah. that smile.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that beauty, that image.
Because that was kind of a big inspiration for New Order's Blue Monday, wasn't it? Like the Donna Summer record.
Yeah, it was Our Love. Our yeah. Love was, yeah. I mean, it isn't even about music. It's it's just her, you know? It's
amazing.
Just her whole... It's what she transmits. It's just beautiful. And
so we have that at the back of the control room or in the live room.
I'd have it behind me in the control room. So you weren't really staring at the image whilst you're working. But I find that every time I turn around, it always surprises me.
Yeah.
You know, when I always get the same feeling from it. The same way, like you just mentioned, like, you know, New Order, whenever I hear Blue Monday, I hear it like I'm hearing it for the first time.
Yeah,
every time I hear it, for some reason, I don't know, I'm not bored of that record. There's certain things that just have such a hold on you that
is it 40 years or so? 45 years?
It's 40 years for Blue Monday, yeah.
Wow.
40 years. Which is nuts.
Yeah. And it does still sound like you said, like the first time every time you hear it. It's one of those.
Yeah, it's I mean, I'm gonna need bafflers in the room, in the control room anyway.
Yeah.
So
perfect.
There'd be a massive one behind me with like I have in my studio. With Donna.
Excellent.
Love
that. Well,
or a cat.
Let's go with Donna.
You get pets and your loved ones and stuff, so okay, well that concludes the building of the My Forever Studio for Errol Alkan. So thank you so much, Errol, for joining us. Okay, well, thanks for tuning in. We will see you next week for more adventures in Studio Foreverdom. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.